Hey there, everybody. Franklin Taggart here, and I want to just say thank you for tuning in for the Your Own Best Company podcast today with my guest, Jessica Abel. Jessica and I in this podcast talk about a class that I took of hers now a couple of months ago, and it was called Prioritize Like a Pro, and it introduced a tool called the Weighted Decision Matrix. Very powerful tool and a wonderful process. And the reason that I'm bringing this up right now before we even begin is that there's a time-sensitive thing that's going on that I wanted you to be aware of. And if you are listening to this podcast before June 13th of 2023, you've got an opportunity to attend Jessica's live version of the Prioritize Like a Pro workshop. She's going to be offering it online on the 13th of June at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. And I would just encourage you, if you are interested in a tool that is going to help to streamline your decision-making and prioritizing creative projects and helping you to find, you know, to find your clear focus in more than just the work area of your life, I think this workshop is one that you will enjoy. So there are a couple of links that I'll give you. The first one is for the live workshop. It's jessicaabel.com. It's on the screen for those of you who are watching the video, and it's in the description for those of you who are listening to the podcast on an audio platform. It is jessicaabel.com/prioritize-like-a-pro, right? jessicaabel.com/prioritize-like-a-pro. Prioritize like a pro has hyphens in between each word. And if you're interested in an evergreen version of the same workshop, where you can just kind of get the content, maybe check in with Jessica after the fact, if you have questions about it, go to jessicaabel.com/notion-mastery. All right, so we've got all kinds of things there for you to check out, but I wanted to make sure that those of you who are listening before June 13th of 2023 have an opportunity to get in on the live workshop that's happening that day. So now let's just get on with the show. Thanks for listening to Your Own Best Company. This is Your Own Best Company, a podcast for people who love to work alone. Hey there, everybody. I'm Franklin Taggart, and this is Your Own Best Company, a podcast for people who love working alone. I am one of you, and it's not that we're antisocial or stuck up or shy or even timid. It is just that we really like having a room with a door to get our work done. And my guest today is someone I think you're really going to enjoy a lot and learn a lot from. Jessica Abel is a cartoonist turned coach turned business owner, and that doesn't even begin to capture all that this person does. And Jessica, I found out about you through a mutual friend of ours, Lauren, and Lauren recommended that I go to your workshop on weighted decision making. And I did that. Totally great tool, by the way. I'm always on the lookout for things like that. But and since then, I've had a chance to look through all of the different things that you offer on your website, and it is just incredible. So if you go to jessicaabel.com, and Abel is spelled A-B-E-L, you'll find the autonomous creative and all of the different things that Jessica is offering. And it is just an amazing variety of things, from courses to trainings, to individual clients, to all kinds of, you know, creative projects. But one of the things that she really does, and it's something that resonates with me, is she helps people get those big things done, those big projects that you've wanted to get done for a long time. Maybe you started the book and it's been fits and starts. Jessica will help you get that thing all the way into the world. Jessica, welcome.
Thanks so much. That was a great intro, and I'm really excited for this conversation.
Well, in our last conversation, we talked a little bit about the workshop that I attended. Now, you offer a pretty wide variety of learning experiences for people, and this was just one of them. Can you talk a little bit? I'm very curious how it is that you wound your way into coaching. You've had a fairly long and successful career in the in drawing and doing comic books and graphic novels and things like that. And how many books have you published now?
It depends on how you count them. Like if you count individual issues or only collections or, okay, you know, all this like mini comics or not. So I don't know, a dozen-ish, something like that.
All right. So a dozen listings in the Library of Congress. We could probably go with that, right?
Yeah, probably something like that. Yeah, probably more than a dozen in the library. Yeah, in the listings for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So how did I get where I am? Well, so I think the easiest sort of key to that is that I've also been a professor at art school since 2001. So really long time now. And actually started in 1997. Yeah, my first course. So, and I just have the teaching gene somewhere. You know, you're saying I have a lot of trainings and a lot of things available. One of the first things I found myself doing when I had my very first website in like 1998 or something was putting on an instructional section, which is like really basic stuff about cartooning tools, how to lay out a piece of, you know, a piece of Bristol board with, you know, panel borders and go through the process of creating a page, how to, you know, which tools to use. And at the time, this was very hard to find information. Obviously it's not anymore, but at the time, you know, I'd been on these obscure listservs and whatever, kind of looking anywhere I could for information about how to do my art form. Technically, like where to get materials, what kind of things to use, what the, you know, techniques look like, how to, you know, how anything. And so as soon as I had any kind of forum, I was sharing that. I was like, let's push that out into the world. People need to know. And I think that's just kind of a sign of like, the kind of person I am. I just want to share all this information and help people not be held back by, you know, just mythology and lack of access and all those other kinds of things.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of easy answer. The more, you know, specific answer is when I was finishing my book Out on the Wire, which we were just chatting about before we went on air.
Yeah.
Which is a nonfiction comic book about narrative technique. It's subtitled The Storytelling Secrets of the New Masters of Radio. Probably should be podcasting, but at the time I was trying to stick to the old words. And you know, it's interviews with, or not interviews with, but it's sort of an essay summing up the core concepts of narrative audio from interviews with, you know, Ira Glass and Jad Abumrad and, you know, all the people in Planet Money and all these other top podcasts. How do they construct stories? So as you can imagine, it was a very intensive project. You know, I interviewed something like, I don't know, 28 different producers, major producers, and then had to somehow put that into some form where I could convey it to other people, like what's really important, all that stuff. And then, of course, drawing a comic book, which takes forever and is really hard and whatever. So at the end of this, I was a little burnt out. I was a little tired and I was looking down the barrel of another book project, you know, immediately in order to pay my bills and keep things going. You know, the business model of being an author is incredibly challenging.
Oh yeah.
Almost impossible to crack. Some people do, but it's very rare. And while I do definitely consider myself successful as an author, the success is of a certain type. It's not economic, that's for sure.
Right.
And so I was trying to figure out what my next step was because I just could not plunge back into a book immediately. I couldn't face it. So, and in fact, I already had a book that I was already in the middle of and had to deliver, which I finally finished in 2019. That was a 12-year project. I think I shared that with you too.
Yeah, we talked about that one last time.
Yeah, it was ugly. So the as part of the Out on the Why project, I created a narrative podcast of my own, also called Out on the Wire, and it is a pedagogical, as I said, can't stop, pedagogical podcast where there are little challenges in each thing. So there's a sort of, we examine one of the principles that's in the book, and then there's, you know, sort of, okay, now you try it at the end of each episode. And so while it was live and for the next, you know, whatever, 6 months afterwards, we maintained an online group where people could come and post their responses and questions and have conversations about these things.
Right.
And that's where I went to ask, what should I do next? What do you guys want? What should I, you know, what could I create that would work for you? And really, I was thinking about storytelling because that's what I was deeply involved in at the time, you know, narrative, anything. So maybe I'd be a course on, I don't know, developing characters or, you know, writing dialogue or I don't know what. But really what came back so clearly from the group was this cry from the wilderness of like, I am stuck, I'm procrastinating, I get distracted all the time. How can I finish this thing?
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel like I'm worthy, you know, all those kinds of things. And if there's one thing I know I'm very good at, it is finishing giant projects. So, you know, I'd always been the one to take over when everything else was falling apart and be like, all right, everybody, we're doing this now, and like get everybody in order and get it out the door. So I put together a little very, very minimal email course for that pilot group on getting a creative project done. And that evolved very quickly into the course that I have now, which is the Creative Focus Workshop. And I mean, it's evolved 1,000 times since then where, you know, as a teacher, you know, every time you're working with anyone, but especially with a group,
yeah,
you learn as much as you teach, right? You get so much back from what students and participants have, you know, their experiences and the things that work for them, things that don't work for them, experiences you've never had that they're bringing in. And so it's evolved a lot. In fact, I just ran a pilot live accelerator version of this where it was a 2-day workshop with, yeah, you know, a small group of people. It's where I sort of live taught through it. And again, you know, new versions of most of these activities that I've had for, you know, 5 or 6 years and new responses. So it was really interesting. But anyway, that's how I moved into coaching. And so first it was a little course and then coaching layers have gotten added onto that. And I moved from initially just being in that, I thought it was productivity, but it's not actually, it's more like executive function. You know, how yeah. do you, and I think your theme for your podcast of a room of one's own and working on your own works, I mean, so perfectly meshed with both the motivation and also the problems that come with trying to work independently and do your own thing. You want to do your own thing.
Yeah.
But how do you regulate your way through it? How do you make sure it happens? How do you make sure that you're not killing yourself with the work, that you're actually, you know, you are leaving your room and going yeah. and talking to other people and doing other things that are important. All of that is the executive function. And that's essentially what we do in the Creative Focus Workshop. So that's my base and remains at the core of a lot of what I do. But then I've built onto that because many of the people who come to me are people who want to be making a living at this.
Yes.
Added on teaching about marketing and then business building. So at this point, I have a business coaching program called the Incubator, and I do one-on-one coaching for projects of any kind. So the projects might be, how do I get this finished? Or it might be, how do I launch this product? Or how do I launch this business in a way that will be profitable and not kill me on the process?
Very important questions.
Very important questions. And I would say, like, those, I think, unusually for the kind of work that I do, those questions come first for me.
Yeah.
So this is the thing that I think is different and that I would want to offer your listeners as sort of a new way of thinking about getting the work done and all this stuff, is to really flip the order of how you're looking at what you're trying to get done and not put the thing first, but put yourself first.
Yeah.
Put your needs, your functionality, your life first, And so when you're building a business, for example, or an offer, you're trying to make money with something, don't start with like, I have this thing, I think I can sell it, but what do I want? Like what, yeah. You know, what is it? How much money do I want to bring in with this thing? How much time do I have to devote to this thing? Who are the kind of people I want to be working with around this thing? What does success look like? And if you start there, then you're able to build, you know, maybe the thing needs to change. That's okay. You know, as long as you know what you need out of it, you can make those changes in a strategic way instead of just being like, I'm trying to sell this thing and it's kind of working, but yeah. Then it's not kind of working. And then wait, I need another thing. And oh my God, I'm overwhelmed and all that stuff.
Well, that gives the business and the work a wonderful context to exist within. And I think a lot of times if we don't have that context, it's just like we can be working around the clock mm-hmm. all the time, not getting anything done, but feeling like we're working all the time. And, you know, it adds to the frustration and it adds to the exhaustion and the overwhelm.
Mm-hmm. And even if you are getting things done, there's no end to it. You know, unless you set up like, what are my goals and am I hitting my goals in terms of what results do I want? There's no end. There's no way to say, okay, that's enough.
Yeah. I'm very curious how your own creative work, as you've added all of these layers of coaching and teaching, how has your commitment shifted in your own, you know, art? And maybe in your own understanding and your own approach to, you know, production and design and all of the creative work that you need to do, how's that shifted?
Well, I mean, to be totally honest, all of my creative energy has gone into building a business over the last 6 or 7 years, you know, it's been over 7 years, but like, it wasn't everything for a while. Now it's like, that's what I do.
Yeah.
And, I do feel like I'm at a pivot point in the next little while of, all right, ready to shift my attention back to something else. But what my attention has been on, you know, when you're running a business solo, you not only are having to solve all kinds of creative problems of like, how do I put these elements together? How do I, you know, coordinate different inputs in such a way that, you know, it becomes this world that I'm trying to create for people. And how do I, you know, and then you're writing curriculum. There's all the copywriting is very creative. All those things are, you know, it takes up all of your energy. And in some ways, I think that's one of the things that for creative people can be really problematic is that they don't understand how much that's a whole job. It's a whole thing. Like,
yeah,
that's a whole thing. And if it feels like it's taking a lot, it does. That's not wrong. You're not wrong about that, but you do need to, you know, and for me, it's been set up as basically a full-time commitment outside of my teaching, because I still teach in the university.
Right.
So that aside, I think my project over the last few years has actually been to reprioritize non-work activities in a way that I have not since I was very young, you know, being with my family, taking time off, being in the garden, so that when I was working as an author, that was just out the window. You know, it was like, just all I could do was be in the studio.
Yeah.
But now, like, my first job is to fix that part. And then my second job is to build the individual creative work back in. Once I have kind of a little bit more space. And I see the space coming, you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm ready to see that change.
That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about like, what are some of the practical ways that you have come around to honor those non-work commitments?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's understanding that those non-work, not commitments, but desires, you know, that it can be commitments and it's okay. Like that you need to put that, it doesn't make you less of a serious writer or artist to commit to weekends off, you know, and to not be in the studio. And a lot of times when I'm teaching, how do you make sure your creative work happens? One of the things I say is, put your rest times and your off times in the calendar first. You know, you have to put in the essentials, like get up, take a shower, eat breakfast. You know, that stuff goes in first. But then the next thing to put in is when you're not going to work.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you're going to fill it all up with, you know, creative work you want to do, but also all the admin and garbage and whatever you have to do all week. That's all going to take up all the time, and you're not going to leave any time for fun or for seeing people or any of the other stuff that keeps you alive.
Yeah.
And so it really is one of the things I talk about a lot. And this actually was something that Oliver Berkman quoted from me in his book, 4,000 Weeks, is this idea of paying yourself first with your time. And so that applies as much to writing your novel as it does to going to a movie with your best friend. You know, if this is a priority for you, if this is something that's, you know, is important to your life, then you have to put that in first. And whatever happens with the rest of the things, you're going to deal with the consequences. You know, you'll deal with it. It's like, you know, and there are plenty of people for whom, you know, their flexibility around their time is very, very minimal, you know, like 20 minutes a day have flexibility. Yeah. But when that's the case, it's even more essential that you make choices about that time, that you decide what you want to do with it. Even if it's take a nap, that's fine, but you decide it. And then that gives you a sense of control over your circumstances in your life when everything else may be just completely exploding.
Yeah.
You know, the less time you have, the more important it is to say, that's my time and I get to decide.
In the weighted decision-making workshop, you introduced a tool that you've created called the weighted decision matrix.
I did not create that.
Oh, you didn't.
But I have adapted it. Yes. Just to be fair.
You've adapted it well, and you should claim authorship of the adaptation at least.
Oh, yeah. Well, that I'm willing to do. But I did want to make clear that the weighted decision matrix is an existing tool in the world and used for many things, but not usually used in this particular kind of way.
Okay. There were two things out of that workshop that kind of hit home for me. One of them was that it's easy to have a to-do list, but to add the weighted factor really changes the perception of the task on the list. It helps you actually rank things differently. Mm-hmm. And it kind of gets you out of that tyranny of just starting at the top of the list and working your way down to the bottom. That was one thing that I really picked up from that.
Have you ever gotten to the bottom? Because I haven't.
I never have. I never have. There's always leftovers for tomorrow. And I've been doing a lot of work personally just around the idea of managing energy instead of time. And mm-hmm. being able to, you know, kind of see energy rhythms through the day and then assigning high energy tasks to high energy times and low energy tasks to low energy times. Which I found the weighted decision matrix actually feeds right into that beautifully. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that came out of that workshop that has really stuck with me is something that you said kind of right at the end. And that is that not only do we have to consider what it is we are going to work on and the commitments we are going to follow through with, but it's equally important to decide the things that we're not going to do.
Yeah, I would say almost more important. I think saying no is one of the most important things we can do proactively.
Yeah.
To make our lives better, basically. And we need to say no vigorously and in many, many ways that we do not. And this is one of the things I taught in my workshop, the Live Accelerator workshop the other day. I taught a whole lesson on saying no. How do you say no? Yeah. And there's two kinds of saying no that we have to be aware of. And one is, and they're both fraught, they're both difficult. One is saying no to other people.
Yeah.
You know, somebody wants something and you have to say no to them. And first of all, I just want to give everybody who's listening, I want to give you permission to say no to whatever you want to say no to.
Yeah.
No is a complete sentence. It's fine. You can just say no. But I do teach this technique called the yes, no, yes sandwich, where you, sandwich a no between two delicious yeses. So you have, if somebody writes you an email and says, hey, can you contribute for free to this, you know, my magazine or something, or can you come volunteer and da da da, you write, Dear so and so, oh my gosh, what an amazing project. That sounds so cool. You're genius. So a yes, you know, like something reaffirming. And then you sandwich the no. Unfortunately, in order to honor my existing commitments, and this is important, do not list what the commitments are.
Yeah.
Do not talk about the time scale of the commitments. Nothing else. No details. I will be unable to participate, help you write, blah, 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 blah. And then that's your no. And then the other delicious yes is, I really wish you all the best with this project, and I hope you'll keep me updated on your future success. Do not put any dates in anything. Never say, you know, something like, I'm busy right now, because then they're going to say, well, and when are you not going to be busy? Don't open the door.
Yeah.
And it's not just because, first of all, a definitive no is kind, because it means the person can go, oh, Jessica can't do that thing. I'm going to go ask Franklin, you know, and they're able to move on with their lives.
Yeah.
If it's not a wedding proposal, like a marriage proposal, it's kind to say no quickly, right?
Yeah.
It's kind then too, if you're going to say no, but like there, you know, there can be more hurt feelings involved. Mostly there's not, right? Mostly it's not that big a deal. But so say no quickly, say no definitively. The worst answer you can give is a no answer. Just, I mean, not an answer, no answer at all, right? Not answering is the worst, because it leaves this other person hanging.
Yeah.
Potentially puts their timeline behind, makes them unable to move on, makes them come back to you and ask, you know, like, are you really going to do this? I mean, can you please? And the second worst is maybe, you know, maybe is a terrible answer, because that puts you and the other person into a state of open loopness forever, where yeah. you're like, you know, they're thinking maybe you'll do it. You're thinking I should get back to them and I owe this to them and whatever it is. I know this is really difficult. Sometimes I think, and this is what I recommended to my students in this workshop, get together for a session with somebody else, like do a co-working session, say at the beginning what you're doing, write the yes, no, yes sandwich.
Yeah.
And then get everybody else to like read it to them, make sure it sounds good, and then like get their support to send it and break off this thing. Even if you've already said yes to something, you can send a yes, no, yes sandwich. You can say, like, as it turns out, I'm unable to do this due to my existing commitments. I'm sorry. I really hope you can find somebody. If you have an idea for somebody, like you might reach out to so and so, but you can still do it. But the second kind of no is actually the more difficult no, which is the no to yourself.
Yeah.
That is even harder, because it feels like anything you come up with, you should be able to fit it in. Anything on your list, anything you think like, well, that would be a good idea. Yeah. If you think that would be a good idea, you put it on your list and you're like, now I will accomplish this thing, which is not going to happen. You know, there are only so many things you're going to finish. And so being really clear, and this is where the weighted decision matrix comes in, about what actually matters to you and what doesn't, what's going to make an impact on your life and what just would be a nice to have, those things help you make those decisions more clearly.
One of the things that I appreciated about that was the different types of weights that you had identified. It included things like fun.
I mean, if you want, like whatever matters to you. I should explain what the thing is. So the weighted decision matrix at its base is essentially a way of totting up rankings on some option for a decision. So you have a couple options for your decision, like, do I want to go to Aruba or New York, right? So it's a vacation decision matrix. And so you can say, like, you could just say, like, do I want to do one or the other? But if you want to kind of figure out what are the pros and cons, you can say, well, I like, you know, do you like or dislike going to urban places? Does it need to be hot? Does it need to have a beach? Do you need to be able to swim? Expense, you know, flights, distance, access to, you know, something like maybe somebody has an apartment in one or the other, you know, it's all different things that could be criteria for your decision about where to take a vacation.
Yeah.
And you can just say, okay, well, you know, New York checks off three of these things and Aruba checks off five. So I'm going to Aruba. That's easy. But sometimes the decision is really, really hard. Should I go to New York, Montreal, Paris, or Chicago? You know, they're all urban places. They're all super interesting in their own ways. They're all going to have different qualities that are much more similar than like New York and Aruba. So then you can use weights. So essentially what you say is like that I can, you know, my housing would be under X percentage of my budget is really important because I want to make sure I have plenty of money to go to clubs, yeah. right? You know, there have to be clubs. That's important. So like those things, you could give them more weight. You can say these are like the most important things, and you do this numerically. It's not important exactly how, but like you add numbers,
yeah,
so that they become multipliers. So if you say, you know, having nightclubs and having money to go to nightclubs is really important, then you might end up going to say Chicago and not New York, because Chicago is going to have nightclubs, but maybe more affordable, you know, or maybe Montreal. New York will have plenty of nightclubs, but it's not going to be affordable. So there's going to be, you can see how those numbers would change, right?
Yeah.
So what we did in our workshop was picked criteria, and pick criteria first before we looked at the projects. Because as I said, when you come up with a list of projects, you're like, and I should do those all. Like, those are all projects I love, so I'm going to do all those. Just what order should I do them in? Which isn't really the right question. The question is like, what's the one thing you want to finish? And then we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens. Like, we'll see what else, what kind of room you have left, you know? And so if you can't start with the list, because the list will confuse you. Yeah. You have to start with what's important to you. And so that's what we did first. We brainstormed about like what's important to you without regard to anything, no weights, no nothing, just what's important, like what's going on right now? Do you need to be making money? Does that not matter to you right now? Do you need to get a lot of sleep? Are you burnt out? You know, so you need a lot of rest. Do you need to be doing something that's super fun and engaging? Do you need to be doing something that really will get in front of a certain audience? All of those things are very time local in anybody's yeah. life. Like, it's just true right now. And maybe different 6 months from now, but are very important right now. So yeah. if you kind of do all that brainstorming first, then you can come up with your very personal criteria for what matters. And then you say, well, which of these things is more important than other things? And that's yeah. really tricky, but you can play with that and, like, you know, make different decisions. But I say, you know, in the worksheet that I put together, it's like, you're ranking them 1 to 5, and it's like 1 to 5 stars, you know, right. 1 is bad, 5 is good. So like, which is more important than other things? Do you really need to make money right now? That's 5, yeah. you know, does it have to be fun? That's a 5. Does it need to be in front of a certain audience? Well, it'd be nice, but it's a 1. So you rank these things differently, and then you look at your projects, and then you rank your projects relative to these particular things. This yeah. project, like, you know, coming on Franklin's podcast, that's something that I could do. It's an option for my time, and it will get me in front of Franklin's audience. Yeah. Great. I'm in favor of that. That's what I want out of my life right now. And so it's going to rise to the top of my list. Whereas, I don't know, working on a proposal for a new book could be really important to me 6 months from now.
Yeah.
But it's not important right now. So it's going to fall to the bottom of the list, because I don't need to be creating new projects for myself. I need to be finishing things that I'm already doing.
That's great. And then once you've worked through all of this, you've got something that's just like right there in detail, and you can then make decisions based on something more than just a hunch or just that it's on your to-do list. You know, you've got some kind of criteria to look at that mm-hmm. gives you all the information that you need to make better decisions.
Yeah. One thing I want to say about this particular framework is one of the coolest things it does is it has a forcing function for what you actually care about, because a lot of times you'll end up with results and you'll be like, that doesn't look right.
Yeah.
And then you have to go, well, what are my criteria? What am I saying is important? And is that actually what's important? Wow. So, you know, a lot of times people will say, none of these things are fun, and fun is crucial to me. You know, one of the things that's really important to me personally is a level of risk. I need things to be a little exciting, a little bit risky.
Yeah.
And so if I'm choosing big projects that I'm going to invest a bunch of time into, I need to know that they're going to push me. If they're going to be too easy, I'm going to be bored. So having it be a sure thing would be awesome if that's also, but it's more about the creative risks.
The risk and the excitement.
Yeah. I mean, not more, cool. and as much, let's say. But that could lead into what have been, what's my learning curve been. I mean, I think that the biggest, I mean, it's been constant over 30 years of professional life, you know, but the that big pivot point in 2015, as I was finishing Out on the Wire, was realizing there was such a thing as a business model. And I had one. And it was terrible. Like, it was just not set up for success in terms of financial success and also in terms of life balance success, just, you know, sustainability.
Yeah.
And that's the basic business model of an author, you know, like a commercially published author. You spend a bunch of time putting together a proposal or actually creating an entire book. You sell the book for an advance. You finish the book, you publish the book, you get the rest of your advance, and then you probably never see another penny because it never earns out its advance. And meanwhile, you're on to your next book and your next book and your next book, trying to get enough advances in that you can live.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, doing a bunch of other things to try to actually make your bills pay, get your bills paid, like teaching. And, you know, for me, it was like, you know, freelance illustration and doing one-off comic strips and whatever, like just way too much, way too much. So seeing that and going, oh, that's messed up. Like, why didn't I know that? Why didn't anybody ever tell me that?
Yeah.
Was kind of the spark that led me to becoming a business coach, because I wanted other people to understand that. And I wanted other people to be able to, again, start from your needs, start from what is essential to you to have a life worth, you know, business and a professional life worth living, you know, not a life worth living in the larger sense, although it contributes, obviously. But, you know, that rather than constantly wondering why you're coming up short, you know, and struggling to fill an income gap, like plan around, you know, get the strategic underpinnings you need. But then it took me another 5 years or something to learn what I needed to actually understand how all those pieces click into place well enough that I could actually teach them to anybody. You know, so I was teaching little bits and, you know, dribs and drabs here and there. But I remember thinking back in, you know, 2017, 2018, people asking me questions about this. And I really, I could talk about the basic idea of a business model, but I had no idea how to help people figure out what to do about it. Like, what else could you do? And so my own, as a result of not really understanding how it works all that well, and I've taken a lot of courses and coaches and whatever, and they've all contributed something, some piece of knowledge, some, you know, benefit, but nobody has taught through this underlying strategic foundational part of building a business.
Yeah.
So it took forever to put it all together. And so I've built my own sort of faulty business models over the time and evolved towards something a little bit more stable. And really what it comes down to is the big secret of making enough money without killing yourself for independent people who are trying to run a solo business is sell fewer things to fewer people for a lot more money.
Yeah.
And it sounds like people always go like, well, how could I do that? And how could I pray? But that's the problem. That's a solvable problem. I mean, it's a hard problem, but that is a solvable problem. But what you can't, what most independent business owners and creatives cannot do is make enough stuff and sell enough individual, small, low-priced things, whether it's a course or a book or a small sculpture or stickers or whatever, to make a middle-class living.
Right.
Or even a very, like, you know, very marginal living. It's just enormously difficult. And this is like this state secret. Like, nobody talks about this. I teach this in art school, you know, because I teach at the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts and I teach professional practice. And I teach the business models now that I know how to do it. And all my students come in and they're like, I want to make stickers and make, you know, commissions on Instagram. And I, by the time I'm done with them, they're just like, okay, I know, services, high end. Got it. Okay. I'll figure something out. I don't know.
Yeah. I want to be on Etsy. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they do. And I get why. I get why. It makes all the sense in the world. And it's, you know, lovely and fun to sell some things and be like, wow, I'm making some money. But going from some money to enough money, that is an unbridgeable pass.
Yeah.
For like 99.999% of people.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Look at the stats on people who are trying to make a living as creators on the internet.
I know that you offer many, many things, but I'd really like for people to know what needs to happen next in their engagement with you and what you do?
Well, I would certainly love to hear from any of your listeners who are interested in working with me as a coach. You can go to jessicaable.com/coaching to check out my one-on-one offerings. But if that seems like too big a leap, I completely understand. And there's a tab called trainings on my site that has a couple different free classes that also introduce paid classes and let you know what I can do. So I think the best starting place for a lot of people is the Creative Focus Workshop. And I have a free workshop that sort of leads into that and explains a lot about it called the Creative Engine Masterclass. And that's, you know, it's a free thing. And I think it's really valuable on its own, but also has kind of a portion where it says like, and here's what the Creative Focus Workshop is. And so you can think about whether that would be for you.
Very good. The other thing that I'm curious about, and this will be the last question of our time today. I'm very curious if you had to go back and do one thing over again, what would you choose to do and why?
I might not have moved back from France in 2016.
Tell us more.
Do I need to explain that one? I moved back in August of 2016.
Oh my gosh. That would, yeah, what timing, right?
Right. I could have waited another year, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, another year or two. That would have been nice.
And what do you think, how would that have made things different for you?
Well, it would have complicated a lot of things that are not worth getting into, but it probably wouldn't have been a good idea, but it would have been nice to not be here then. I got to tell you that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good. So if anyone is interested in getting in touch with Jessica, jessicaable.com, autonomous creative, I was really impressed with the workshop that I took, and it was so generous of you, and it was so informative. I'm still chewing on it. And the fact that you just gave it away tells me a lot about the value that you offer in every other area as well. Jessica, I appreciate so much the work that you're doing in the world, and I'm wondering, do you think you'll ever write another book?
I think maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know about more comics. I might leave that to other people, but I definitely have some ideas for some fiction, some nonfiction. We'll see. Could be.
All right. Well, we'll wait and see. And in the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with Jessica, you've got all of her information right there. Jessica, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Your Own Best Company. If you enjoyed the show, would you do me a favor and subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast host? If you really love it, leave me a review or share it with your circles. If you feel like your career is reaching a dead end, or you're feeling a deep sense of dissatisfaction in your work right now, I help people discover their gifts and then find or create new opportunities that are the best fit for their talent, experience, and lifestyle. Email me at coaching@franklintaggart.com for more information. I also help people start, finish, and launch creative projects, and I offer an ongoing marketing mastermind for solopreneurs and freelancers. More information on these programs and services can be found at franklintaggart.com. Thanks again for spending this time with me.